Hello, welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name's Dave Stevens, I'm a B2B marketer, and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by B2B marketers for B2B marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we've got well over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you joined us, you're really very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Matthew Leopold, the head of brand PR and content marketing at LexisNexis UK, about political messaging in marketing, plus managing director of Green Target Global Group, Daphne Grabsipeni, on how the ESG agenda is shaping business comms in 2021 and beyond, and group managing director of Just Global, Martin Simcock, on change in business marketing. We're living in interesting times, and there's a growing trend for marketers to comment on them. Brands are vying with each other to support Black Lives Matter, immigration, carbon zero, and so on. But should they be? I'm joined by Matthew Leopold, who is the head of brand PR and content marketing at LexisNexis UK. Matthew, welcome to the podcast.
Hi there, how things?
It's good to see you. Very good, thank you. So before we dive into this tricksy subject, tell us a bit about LexisNexis UK.
LexisNexis is the secret tool that lawyers use when they need to get an answer to you, the customer or their client, quickly and easily. So it is a massive legal intelligence database full of the actual law and the advice and the guidance and the tools and the precedents that lawyers need to be able to do their job. So it's an invaluable tool to lawyers world round. And my job is to make sure that our customers know about us and see us in the right image. And certainly in the world of brand and brands and politics, it's a very important part of my role.
Well, then in that case, you're absolutely the person to speak to about this one. So let's dive in. Why don't you give us some examples, first of all, of brands that are getting involved in politics?
So I've been thinking about this, and I'm going to just pick out a couple, and they're probably not ones that we would think about, because certainly in a post-Trump world, in a post-Brexit world, there are some obvious brands that spring to mind. But WeWork, quite a few years ago, WeWork declared that they were not going to serve any meat products in their organization and that they would not accept any of their employees to claim back any foods that were not vegetarian. And this is a really intriguing decision. I remember it happening at the time. And as a meat eater, I was somewhat shocked and taken aback. And they were making a big stand. They were making a very clear stand for climate change and the impact that meats have. But it does seem like it didn't necessarily have a deep connection to WeWork and the WeWork brand. And I think that's why it stood out for me, because I couldn't understand why they picked this as a particular cause. There were lots of decisions that they could make. And yeah, no doubt that it was done with absolutely the right intent. But how did this really correlate into the bigger picture, the bigger WeWork conversation, rather than it being just a pet project, if you like, of the chief executive, which I suspect it probably was. And then another example I'll pick out is our dear friend in Wetherspoons. Wetherspoons, as you know, probably one of the brands that took the strongest stand in support of Brexit. And just thinking a little bit about the consequences of that decision and some of the thoughts, particularly among my friendship group, about whether or not they would want to continue to be customers of Wetherspoons. Two very different examples, but two examples that one will probably have minimal impact on the customer base and one may well do, but perhaps people have short memories, perhaps they won't.
And really good examples. And when you were talking about the WeWork one, you kind of asked this next question, but I kind of need you to nail your colours a little bit more for us. So why are brands like WeWork and Wetherspoons, why are they behaving in this way?
Well, I'd hope that there is a lot of research that explains that standing for a principle means that your customer, your target customer, will resonate, will have interest, and you will then drive and build loyalty with them. I suspect in some cases it is in these two examples, I think, down to the chief executive and their particular brand and their decision that they want to stand for a particular topic. And in my view, I think all of this has to come back down to the brand itself, what the brand stands for, what the brand's purpose is, and making sure that making a stand, a political stand, correlates very firmly to the heart of that brand's purpose. So Wetherspoons, to some extent, you could argue, Tim knows and understands his customer base, and actually by standing for, you know, a topic that's so important to a huge number, you know, 52% of the nation, actually does correlate with his customer base, and it drives his brand purpose forwards. I think really understanding that is critical to the success and the wisdom of taking a political stand.
That's interesting, both in terms of you know, how you recommend brands should behave, and also your sense of the cult of personality of the various business leaders concerned. I guess I would reflect that if I look at things like Black Lives Matter, I suspect a lot of brands too were driven along by a kind of a strong wave of support that they want around a particular issue that they wanted to ride on top of, and they there was a kind of sense that the brand needed to speak in a particular situation around a big issue. Would you buy that?
I think it's really important in all contexts to remember your customer base, your employee base, and if you're a listed company, then you've got share considerations, shareholder considerations as well. And standing for a topic is very difficult, is very different to standing up for a political issue. So, for example, the Black Lives Matter movement made a huge impact across the entire world, really. And I think standing up and saying there is absolutely no space for racism, there is absolutely no reason why the color of your skin should determine your seniority or the jobs that you're able to do. Those, I think, hopefully, as a world, we've gone beyond that being a political statement. That is a statement of fact that it is just right to do. I think then some of the trouble came about when some organizations went further than that, or they endorsed specific organizations rather than the principle that everyone is and should be treated equally.
Hmm. Okay, so what do you think the risk is for brands of actually behaving in this way, you know, for the WeWorks and the Wetherspoons of this world? What, you know, what was the downside for them?
So there is always a risk that you alienate a percentage of the population or a percentage of your customer base. And I think a lot of thought needs to go into weighing up, is the risk of not endorsing or going against something that's happening worth it, or should actually, is it worth putting the time and the effort in? And I think the Black Lives Matter movement is a great example that actually it's so clearly and obviously the right thing to say, that everyone must be equal, that actually to stand against that would be totally alien and very strange. Yet some organizations decided it wasn't necessary to say that they were part of it. And I think this is what's so important, is saying that you are part of a movement or that you stand for something is one thing, making sure you act appropriately is another. And kicking off internal monitoring to look to see, is this an issue in your business? Are there ways that we can improve internally is more important, certainly to the employees of an organization in many cases, than saying that you're in support of a motion, because actually doing speaks far louder than words.
Well said. So come on, let's get you to nail your colours to the mast. You're the head of brand. So where do you stand on brands getting involved in politics and why?
So I think it really comes down to who you are as a brand, and can you authentically participate in a conversation, because it links back to your brand and your brand's purpose and your brand's tone of voice, if you like, for better words. So, for example, there's a great example of Burger King doing a big bus advertising campaign where they talked about, here's a big whopper on the side of a bus, right? Now, that's cheeky. You certainly wouldn't get my company doing that, because it's not we are a professional services, professional legal intelligence company. So we would never do an advert like that. That is inappropriate. It shows an opinion that we don't do. We need to state factually, this is what the law is and this is what the law says. So we would never go down that way. But for Burger King, it was a great play on words. It was a great way of showing who they were as a brand. And I think it's quite authentic to who they were as a brand. So in that circumstance, even if you were a Brexit supporter or you weren't a Brexit supporter, actually the advertising message is amusing, it resonates, it's contemporary, and you're probably not going to change your opinion as to whether or not you would go to a Burger King.
And so if we take this more generally then, your advice to business marketers in this space is to, I guess, start first with your brand values.
Yes, I think you've got to know who you are as a brand, what you value as a brand, and what your purpose is as a brand. And then from that, so for example, LexisNexis, we do legal intelligence. The thing that's really important to us is the rule of law, the concept that everyone should have access to and is equal under the eyes of the law. And therefore, for us to start talking about, I'll use the example flippantly, as we've just discussed it, about vegetarianism, actually that to us is not a topic that's at the heart of our brand. So for us to start talking about vegetarianism would seem slightly disjointed from what we want to stand for.
Matthew Leopold, head of brand, PR and content marketing at LexisNexis UK, and apparently a meat eater. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Environmental, social and governance topics are taking on a much greater importance for businesses today than even just 12 months ago. But what does that mean for business marketers? I'm joined by the Managing Director of Green Target, Dafina Grabsey-Penny. Dafina, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. Very happy to join your podcast today.
Good to have you here. So before we dive into ESG or environmental, social and governance topics, perhaps you can tell us a bit about Green Target and what they do.
Sure. So for those who don't know, Green Target is a strategic communications consultancy. We work with global businesses operating at the intersection of finance and technology. And our role really involves helping our clients build influence with customers, investors, policymakers and regulators on issues that are critical to their businesses, of which ESG is obviously one of them.
So that gives us a sense of the kind of current state of play, Dafina. Where would you say that the ESG agenda is going next?
Well, the ESG agenda is really expanding, and it's expanding quite fast. So the environment, of course, is going to be a big topic. And after a period of retreat, we're going to see more US engagement on the topic, and we're obviously expecting significant green reforms from Biden's White House, for example. We have the COP26 gathering in Glasgow this year, so the UK can really help shape the global climate change agenda and also influence what we want to deliver over the next 5 years. in the context of COVID, this becomes even more important because we have seen issues such as sustainability, the reliance of supply chains rise in prominence quite significantly. So the pandemic is making individuals and businesses question many assumptions and ways of doing business. I think social issues will also continue to drive ESG, be it issues around diversity, inclusion, and the like. We will see the S in ESG being more prominent than ever, especially after the economic impact that the pandemic has had on our economies. And lastly, I think there's also a demographic shift which businesses need to take into account. Their end customers are increasingly from the millennial generation who typically tend to pay more attention to these issues and they tend to put their money where their mouth is, much more than the previous generations.
So there's a lot basically going on there. How would you suggest business marketers respond to that agenda?
There are really two ways we as marketers can help. One is to try and tell stories with purpose and have purpose at the heart of communications. And the other component, it really concerns metrics, because storytelling will help you win hearts, but you really need to have proof that your ESG focus is delivering results to win minds as well. Yeah. So transparency in this respect will be critical. Some firms I see, especially in the finance industry, are kind of wrongly vilified for committing to something and then not delivering the results fast enough. And I think there should be a degree of honesty about how long change will take, and in some cases, the short-term cost of the business as well.
And so thinking about that, are there some business marketers who you would say are already doing this?
Well, when I think of the finance industry, for example, I think BlackRock was a real game changer given their sheer scale as an asset manager, with their CEO making some pretty bold commitments at Davos a couple of years ago. He then followed with a letter this year which tracks their progress around those commitments. And I think for the marketeers that do the best job in this area are those where the drive comes really from the very top of the organization. It makes that job, the marketeer's job, more credible. And as I said earlier, we could do with some more standard metrics around the industry which measure the impact of ESG. And that's definitely a role for marketeers.
And is there a kind of a risk if marketers don't get on board with the ESG agenda today?
It's not really a choice anymore. It's a bit like technology, you really can't avoid it. Whatever your beliefs, you know, ESG is going to be one of the biggest meta themes that will impact all businesses, regardless of what industry they operate in. And not all businesses can adapt quickly. So I think it's critical for businesses to start with areas where they can make a real difference and affect change.
How about pace then? Is there a danger of marketers perhaps going too fast on ESG? What's the right pace that marketers should take ESG to market?
I think the risk is that it's done in a superficial and purposeless way. So it's really more about substance than speed, in my opinion, and being bold enough to acknowledge the issues and how long they will take to fix. That will be critical.
Dafina Grabsey-Penny, Managing Director of Green Target. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dave.
We're living in a world of uncertainty with COVID-19, recession, and political and social conflict dominating our lives. That calls for us to do business marketing differently now and in the future. In our show and tell series, we're hearing from client side and agency side marketers in businesses ranging from startup to mature corporates about topics ranging from changes in working practices to changes in purpose and culture, changes in brand, in marketing strategy, in messages and channels. They'll be sharing experiences and offering advice. Today, it's the turn of Group Managing Director at Just Global, Martin Simcock. Martin, welcome to the webinar and over to you.
Thanks, Dave. Absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. Certainly, that's a very big topic that we're covering there. And I think the short-term impact of COVID is all around us. And I think as it extends beyond any of our initial expectations, we're probably only now just starting to get a glimpse of what the longer term and maybe permanent changes that it'll have an impact on all of our lives. I think as we come out of it, for businesses and people's working lives, I think hopefully much of this will be positive. It was interesting to see this week that Salesforce, for instance, announced that the permanent change to home working policy, something we did last year with our team here at Just Global, both in the US and obviously in the UK. And I think it's going to be a permanent change, which is, after all, it's only people's attitudes that has stopped that happening up until now. And I think the time we're in now, the tools and technology have allowed us to do this for quite a long time. But leaders believing that home and flexible working policies can be beneficial to their business, and not being scared that working from home means that people are less effective. I think what COVID has done for us is to force this change and prove that it can really work. And I think many commentators at the moment have really talked about a five-year digital transformation in 5 months during this time. And I think we've seen that as being something really true for marketing, and how B2B marketing needs to adjust probably to really because of the impact of all this, and you know, and how we look at our customers, and how we look at going to market with for engagement that's going to be a bit more challenging as we go forward. COVID has accelerated so many of the changes that we've seen taking place over the last 2 or 3 years anyway. And I think a lot of these were likely to happen, but maybe more slowly. Prior to us all going into lockdown, we did some of our own research, which was driven by the work that we're doing with our clients around some of their ABM activities. Most of these programs start with insights. You know, we really want to understand them, their products, their solutions. We look at market forces, target accounts, but specifically look at the buyers and the personas and the complexities that we were seeing in these buyer groups and the changes that were happening in these buyer groups. And a lot of these changes were actually created by us, by marketers. We're seeing an increasing number of stakeholders involved in the buying processes, different priorities and agendas. And as marketers, what we wanted to do and still want to do is to make sure that we're creating content that is very specific and very personalized. And very targeted at these individuals. So it's created a situation where there is tons of content. You know, we're making white papers, case studies, solution guides, opinion pieces. I mean, the list is fairly endless. And all of this stuff is free. We're ungating this content. We're putting it out there. But what it leads to is the buyers themselves having far less dependency on sales. They have got the ability to research and get a vast amount of information that they need before making any of their specific buying decisions. I think there's been tons of stats out over the last few years around, you know, 50, 60, 70% of decisions of the buyers have been made before they start engaging with vendors. We're seeing figures around the complexities of buyer groups, again, rising from 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We're seeing some instances where you might have 20 buyers in a buyer group that we're all trying to influence. And as I say, these changes were definitely taking place anywhere. But I think what COVID's done is it has fundamentally changed a traditional sales model. Everyone working at home, sales guys just can't get hold of, particularly the cold sales calls, we just can't get hold of the potential buyers in the way that we used to. Sales are becoming much more dependent on marketing. And over this last year, we've certainly seen that taking place. The need for sales enablement and sales support in order to drive those initial engagements and make sure that the buyers are at least engaging with the content that we're creating is becoming ever more important. Because the sales guys can't reach the buyers in the way that they used to. Add to that, I think that we're all becoming more driven by the values of the brands that we work with. I think COVID is that's something that I think COVID has had a massive impact. I think we've become all more human through this whole period. I think we want to make better connections with the organizations that we engage with and we buy from. We want to believe in them, and we want to believe that they have similar values to us. And I think where what that's done, certainly from a COVID point of view, is that our buyers not only want to know the brands that they're buying from, but they have a plethora of information in order to make that happen. Now, what we had seen is that everyone's turning to marketing automation platforms, and they've been chucking tons of emails out at us. And I think we've all seen these very linear journeys that are being created. I get dozens of emails every week still. And the idea of personalization is it's a hi, Martin, and they know that I work at Just Global. And we can all pick them out. They're all generated by marketing automation. And we all know that we are just a name and a company on a standard email. I think what's becoming really important now is that we start to understand our audience in much, much more detail. The personalization level that we have to get to has got to be much greater than where we've been before with it. We want to make sure that we are enabling our buyers not only to find us, but once they have, we can engage with them in a way and serve them content that is absolutely specific and absolutely relevant. I was talking to Science, who we partner with, who obviously, as many will know, intent data platform. And I think the stats that they come out with, I know the stats they come out with, is only 2-5% of buyers are in market at any one time for a vendor's product or service. So again, what makes this so important is to ensure that we use that intent data at this time to once identify who they are and target those audiences in a way that's going to engage and create a reaction that will drive a response that sales guys can see value from. I think one of the other things we're also seeing as well is this convergence of home and work. This is something that we've been talking with clients about quite a lot, and specifically around where we're looking at media channels and how we reach the audiences. And COVID has certainly created a shift in how we consume that content. No longer are we separated by our working life and our home life. And case in point, we did a project very recently with a client, creating brand content to get that engagement, using podcasts to do so. And we were seeing that, even though it was a B2B targeted audience, we're seeing that 7% of the listeners of those podcasts are choosing to do so through smart speakers, which we know are at home. Also seeing how connected TV in people's homes is driving impact, reach and performance on some of our clients' activities. So I think as a summary of the view that we're seeing and the impacts that COVID has made, is ensuring that we are broader in our thinking about how we reach the audience, understanding that there is only a finite number of people that really want to connect with us at any one time, making sure that at this time we are very specific, very targeted, know that audience inside out, and ensuring that they can find us in order to make that engagement, because sales won't be in a position to find them. I suppose in summary, rather than making it easier for us to sell, what we want to do is to make it easier for the buyer to buy from us.
Martin Simcock, Group Managing Director at Jess Global, thank you very much. And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Matthew Leopold, Daphne Grapsipeni and Martin Simcock. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. If there's more where this came from, just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But that's it for now. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.